All right, welcome back to the Joint Appropriation Committee callbacks. I'm going to find my list. Where did my list go? Don's got my list. Director Forslund, Department of Health, please come on up. Please excuse us, we're nibbling and trying to juggle a few balls at once, so apologize for that. As long as my computer doesn't get fried and as it gets stripped on, we'll be okay.
Mr. Chairman, as long as you're eating, you can't be asking as many questions.
That's a true story. That's not necessarily true, though. So, Director, we've been letting on the callbacks, if you have any couple statements you want over what our concerns are, any follow-up on your introductory remarks from the first time you were here, please go ahead, and then after that we'll go to questions.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any new prepared remarks. The main thing is that we presented some documents, follow-up to you on particularly the Title 25 information, which I'm sure is of utmost interest to this committee. And it was a document that we brought out to you, and that should be it's this one here.
It's much of it's in my box, so it's fairly new.
The issue continues to be a challenge for the department to attempt to manage the parts that we have the authority over. I talked to you in December on where we were at that point in time. Things have changed from even at that point to where we are now. If you take a look at page 3, I just think it's interesting, and it gives you an indication of some of the challenges we have trying to manage this situation. What you have there is a chart, and it shows by county the number of involuntary hospitalizations over from 2012 through 2016, and then you have 17 for the first 6 months of the year. So as an example, the contrast, if you take a look at the Natrona County, is where it has been growing in recent years. You see where it was for the first 6 months. Now contrast that with Laramie County, where their numbers have been significantly lower than Natrona for some time. And while they're still lower than Natrona County, it's potentially double from what they have in the last year. Part of the challenges that we have is that under state law, providers have up to a year to bill us. And so there at times there's lags, and we never know for sure what's coming in terms of the billing. And so what you have in here is data, and going on page number 4 and 5, showing some different scenarios depending on what the numbers come out. And what we're saying is there on page number 4 is projected shortfall for this biennium is somewhere between $8 million to $15.2 million. It's a huge fluctuation or difference there, but you see from the page before the challenges we have because we don't control that intake, and it just depends on how many people are coming into the system and then the treatment that's incurred by these clients once they're into the system. So that's where we are right now. Best guess somewhere between 8 to 15.2 million over the budget. Just to remind the committee again, the budget for Title 25 is approximately $4.4 million, and that is in the State Hospital's budget, and up to this point, we think we're at approximately $3.1 million in expenses for this biennium so far. So probably within the next couple months, we'll be out of money in the Title 25 budget line item, and then we'll start scrambling once again on trying to make up that that shortfall.
Mr. Chairman, can you update us on the gatekeeper process that you're implementing through your rules and regulations, and I think voluntary, or the process and where we're at with that?
Mr. Chairman, we are working with some different counties, furthest along with Natrona County. They have started the process. They've had five people kind of in their system and who are been diverted and who are on basically been the court has worked with them to commit people on an outpatient basis to their facility. Two of them have worked well so far. Three have not worked well. Just a small sample, but it's a start. Some of the other counties are moving forward with efforts on their own without formal designation. I talked to organization yesterday that is getting more aggressive in it, and we talked about whether they need the formal designation or not and some efforts they're making. So working with Natrona, working with Sweetwater, working with Laramie, and so we continue to work with them. But at the end of the day, we're not bringing any new money to the table, and we are trying to encourage them to take actions and see what they can do. Natrona, again, numbers are significantly down, and that has been one of the principal drivers of these costs. And not only has the gatekeeper, Central Wyoming Counseling Center, been active, also, the county government has gotten quite aggressive in it. And so last report, they were working in a more cooperative fashion than they had in the past. And the Natrona County Attorney's Office has been pretty aggressive in trying to find other alternatives. So we'll see.
And Senator Atlanta.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Forsland, you mentioned a little test group of five. I think I heard you say that's in Natrona County. Is that in reference to the alternative site that you told us about, I think, in December? Can you help me with that again? We're trying the best we can to not have to put every one of these folks in the Behavioral Institute, for example, and there's another site. Can you go back over that real quickly for me, what we're trying to do up there?
Well, what you have is a situation where there's a abnormal number of commitments being made in Natrona County, not only for Title 25, but for a number of other processes.
Okay.
We've gathered the data. We've shared it with the principal players within Natrona County. They are working and together, and they being Central Wyoming Counseling Center, Wyoming Behavioral Institute, Wyoming Medical Center, Natrona County Attorney's Office, to name some of them. Law enforcement's been involved in both the county and the city and others. And they're attempting to divert people away from the process or the Title 25 process to other areas of where they can receive treatment short of being involuntarily held in a psychiatric hospital. The way it works in Natrona County is that Natrona County government leases the property, the hospital property, to Wyoming Medical Center. And part of their agreement is the county government does not have to pay for the first 72 hours worth of holds. which is normally that's county government's responsibility. But in Natrona, they have made that part of the contract with Wyoming Medical Center. So Wyoming Medical Center is responsible for the first 72 hours payment. They have contracted in the past with WBI to provide assistance to them for, in effect, treatment, for testifying in hearings, just kind of handling that psychiatric incarceration side of things. But what has happened is is WBI has become, has in effect been the gatekeeper or the designated through a contract with Wyoming Medical Center. That is now being separated, and Central Wyoming Counseling Center is starting to play a more active role working with Wyoming Medical Center. It's in the Wyoming Medical Center's interest to lower these costs also because, again, they have to pay, and it affects their bottom line. So the still the people who get committed through the process in most cases in Natrona County will still end up in WBI, but the numbers for the first 6 months of the year are down significantly. Whether that's going to continue, I don't have a clue, but hopefully through Natrona County government and Central Wyoming Counseling Center and Wyoming Medical Center, they are making enough changes that these numbers will continue to improve. And just as a side note, Central Wyoming Counseling Center is moving forward with designating or establishing emergency or crisis beds at their facility, and they're diverting or converting some of their beds over to crisis for people in beds in who are in crisis, and so they could stay there versus being put into Wyoming Medical Center and being designated through the Title 25 process.
Thank you.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Director Forslund, we understand what you budgeted. And we understand for Title 25, and we understand that you've cut an enormous amount out of your department over the last year. We've seen the governor's recs that would put contingency money out there for Title 25 in the event that it was required. My question to you is, if that contingency money wasn't available and you had to absorb Title 25 moving forward, first, how would you do it, meaning where would you anticipate making those adjustments at? Second would be, when would you need to start doing that to account that? And then the third question that relates to that is, if it impacts those that we anticipate providing services to direct those individuals away from an involuntary commitment, would your plan affect them, and how would you perceive it to affect them?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, I've come before this committee for the last 2 years and asked for additional appropriation to pay for these costs. Again, the Department of Health does not control this system. It controls portions of it, but not all of it. So, but the part that we control is we write the checks. So at the end of the day, if I don't have capacity to treat individuals at the state hospital, I end up having to divert those individuals to private hospitals around the state and don't have the ability to pay for it. It won't be very long before those facilities stop taking those clients. I start informing the courts that we have no recourse for them, and I'll probably end up being held in contempt for not following the state law. So what will happen is, if you say, Director, we're not going to make money available for you for the Title 25 for the third year in a row, You have to absorb that. And I've already taken $90 million, excuse me, actually it's $100 million that's come out of my budget in general funds in the last year, 90 of it in July, 10 of it, in March or basically last legislative session. So $100 million in general funds has been taken out of my budget. And I'm still have to absorb somewhere between $8 to $15.2 million. Then the first thing I will do is look at those areas that I have the flex in. And that's, I told you last month that if you take out my vacant positions, you've just cut off one more appendage for me to try to help pay for a portion of the cost. So I will look at that. I'll look at any other internal administrative areas that we can further reduce. I don't anticipate much, but we'll take one more look at it. And then finally, I will start to cut programs, essentially those community providers across the state. Now, the question is which community providers do I hit? I just put a kind of a list together before I came here. These would be the ones I'd be looking at, and community mental health or providers, DD providers, nursing homes, hospitals, doctors, developmental preschools, drug courts, suicide, drug and alcohol prevention, immunization. I mean, I have to look at those programs because that's where the money is. And I need to start cutting them sooner rather than later. The problem is that I don't know what the shortfall is going to be. So somewhere between, we think, $8 million to $15 million. So do I start cutting $15 million or do I shoot at $8 million? But the problem is I can't wait until next May, April, May, because by then I need extra millions. It'll be too late. So I have to go in and probably start cutting as soon as I can. Because I need that money within 15 months as opposed to 1 or 2 months. If you understand, we'll have 12 months in the next fiscal year plus how many months backing up to get the $8 to $15 million. And so if I'm going to cut the providers, the later in the rest of the biennium I go, the larger the cut I have to take in terms of a percent at that point in time. So I need to start cutting soon. I looked at this whole idea of it's a mental health-related cost. So what if I take it out of just the community mental health organizations? I think that's what you're alluding to, Representative Larson. If I funded at projected at $8 million cut, I would have to reduce their contracts by 20% next year. If I go to $15 million, then I have to cut their contracts by 37%. And that's on top of the 12% we took out in July. So the question is, can they survive by taking those type of cuts? My guess is some probably cannot survive, and they will shut down. So then I have to make the decision, okay, if I don't take it all out of community mental health organizations, then do I take it out of DD providers or the nursing homes or the preschools or whatever? I mean, that's the dilemma that I'm put into. And the concern, again, I have, too, is I say, okay, you have to, plan for the worst scenario. And let's just say it's $15 million. And we cut providers to the tune of an additional $15 million. And then the numbers, are not as bad as they were. And so as a result, I've overcut. And I'm fearful of overcutting. But if I go the other way and I cut $8 million and then I end up much more in a hole, then where do I get that money at the last moment? And so it's a dilemma, and that's why I like the idea if you just set aside some funds, and I'll only draw them if we need them. And I think we've demonstrated within the Department of Health that we don't go crazy, we don't spend the money if we don't need it. We will only spend it if the bills come into us from the different counties who are implementing the involuntary hospitalizations.
Thank you.
Representative Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So following this conversation, and I just want to say up front, seeing the declines in numbers is heartening, and I think a lot of it's based on work that you guys have been doing, the gatekeeper. But you're talking about further cuts, and my question really is, to get to these deduction in numbers, do you have any sense of what the cost has been to the local providers to provide the service that's enabled us to get there?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schwartz, the Community Mental Health Organizations took a 12% cut in July to their contracts. So you would have to ask each of the providers, and this is why I think I testified in November or December, is what's the impact on it? It really depends on each and every provider across the board is how reliant they are on the Department of Health to provide their funding. If it's 100% of their funding, they're obviously more vulnerable than if they've bill private insurance and bill other sources of income. And some providers, it's almost exclusively Department of Health funding. Others, it's a they have a number of other sources of funds that they are you know, that they can they generate for them. So it's a less of impact on those. So across the board, I can't say it's even. I think it depends on the stability, financial stability of each of these centers. And that's just the community mental health funding, let alone, you know, we put millions out in other programs for this population. The largest is Medicaid, and we pay community mental health organizations as well as other providers through those who are eligible for Medicaid. And one of the things that we've done, as I told this committee in December, is we've moved the designated hospitals over to something called Chart B billing, which is essentially they have to submit all their claims through the Medicaid system. And we are collecting that data and finding out who's in it and how many of those people are eligible for Medicaid. And we're forcing those organizations then to go ahead and sign them up for Medicaid, which increases the cost of Medicaid, but it 50% of the money to pay for that is coming from the federal government. The other 50% is state general funds. So it's a net savings for the state. And so we think that is a positive way. We think we're going to continue to see that. The numbers are higher than we anticipated. We're seeing some up to nearly 40% of the people who are eligible for Medicaid currently. And so if it continues on that line, along that line, again, less general fund will need to support these hospitalizations. And so that's a positive.
So, directors, can you quantify how much savings that is so far just upon your sign-ups? That's 40%. That's fairly substantial.
Up to 40%, Mr. Chairman. And I'll ask Stefan Johansson if –
It works. It just takes two buttons on that thing. You got to get the light on.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Stefan Johansson, Department of Health. It is a little bit early to project total savings with the new billing system in Title 25, but with the approximate 6 months of data we have from the claims that have come in the new system, We can see anywhere from a 4 to 8% savings to the state funds in Title 25. A lot of this is dependent on how the system is coded. So moving forward, as we learn more about how these claims could be made or this system be made more efficient, we'll be looking at drawing down federal funds in Medicaid eligibility for different types of Title 25 clients like seniors, in the rare cases that we have children come through the system, et cetera. So that's system improvements that will be made going forward. But currently, as Director Forslund mentioned, we're seeing more eligibility than I think we would have anticipated, but still pretty early in the system launch, with about 6 months, 5 or 6 months of data in the system, but anywhere from a 4 to 8% savings currently.
Thank you. Representative Sommer.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I guess Director Forslund, in listening to the areas where you would have to cut, one of them wasn't personnel. You talked about cutting programs. I don't know if programs included personnel or if programs just included pass-through services. And I realize that primarily your agency's pass-through, and I realize there's vacancies and all that. But in the discussion, if you have to cut, and I this is continually every agency, it's the same thing. There's never a body, a live body, that will get cut, it seems like. So just speak to me a little bit about if you do make cuts, or if you had to make cuts, would there be any positions that would be a part of that, do you think, or would it strictly be passed through to the people?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, to address your question, got a couple parts to it. One is, I reported to you in December that we did cut, if I remember right, I can't find it real quick here, but I think it's 32 positions. And those were vacant positions. And frankly, my experience in managing in this economy in the public sector for the many years as I have is, and having to lay people off versus cutting vacant positions, I much always rather cut vacant positions than throw people out on the street for no fault of their own. And the fact that are we looking for just to lay people off for the sake of laying people off, or are we saying cut positions that when you can, where you can, and that is preferable than laying people off. And I subscribe to it is you take vacant positions out. And we've taken, like I said, 32 positions out. We've held some others that we could take out. But the problem is I take those out, then I don't have the ability to use float to pay for Title 25 costs. And so it's a catch-22 for me. But if you say, Director, you will lay people off because that's what we want, then I'd have to go back and say, where are most of the people? Most of the people are in, 75% of them are out in the fields around the state, and most of them are in the facilities. And what I would say is, first of all, I would not lay people off. I would recommend to you to shut facilities down and get the state out of those facilities and privatize it and not just lay people off at those and weaken our ability to keep people safe and stay in compliance with federal regs. So, and if you tell me that's a way to go, then I would say start looking at where the bodies are, and start looking at shutting some of the facilities that we have down.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director, if we were to set up contingent appropriations, and as far as determining the funds and, you know, where the line might be going, looking specifically at Laramie County, and I know you don't personally read the medical records yourself, but I wonder if in talking with the folks that deal with this area, with this big increase, is there any sense whether, because I know the system here in Laramie County has worked really quite well with the hospital for a long while, is there any sense whether, say, the 20 people that have gone in year to date, are, you know, the same 20 people that have this problem every year in Cheyenne, or have people moved to Cheyenne from other parts of the state and that has increased the numbers? Or do you have any sense of what's underlying the change in Laramie County?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, you're asking a good question, fair question, and it's a question that we had discussions through the Title 25 Task Force over the course of the last year to 2 years. And, you know, what's your data? What's your research showing, et cetera, et cetera? And we continue to talk to folks as ones we don't have a robust data system because, again, we don't control all of it. Two is I have nobody in my department whose job is to work on Title 25 exclusively. I think that's a mistake. It is turned into a multi-million dollar problem for the state. I've got we talked to the Title 25 committee and said, here's part of my problem. I don't have anyone who's sitting there researching it and doing it. I've got people who work on it part-time, but then they have other things to do. One of the things that we think needs to be done is to at least get one person devoted exclusively to the Title 25 process. I've got a vacant position. I have not filled it at this point in time because I didn't know what was going to happen through this process. So I've held it open, and if that is left, then I'll be looking to bring somebody in or fill that to start to be able to say, hey, what's happening in Laramie County right now? Get out there and start talking to the hospital. Start talking to Peak. Start talking to law enforcement and such and start working with the judiciary. I don't have that right now, and it's part of the frustration that we all have with it. But it's the reality, and I wish I could answer your question today. I don't know.
Director, what number is that position?
I don't know the number of the position. It's in my office, and it's been vacant for a period of time.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And continuing kind of along those lines, Director Forslund, this committee, as we've looked through the budget, have looked at those vacant positions and the length of time that they're there. And we remember the discussion that you've had with this committee on the difficulty in recruiting some of the professional positions at the State Hospital and WLRC, and as well your anticipated need for positions at the WLRC as that expansion takes place when we build the skilled nursing facilities there to handle the hard-to-place people. Can you identify or get back to this committee those positions, those professional positions that aren't filled that are necessary to comply with the needs of those facilities and then those positions that you have been holding in anticipation of the campus development at WLRC for us? We muddled through that a little bit, but I don't know that we got it very accurate. So if we could get that, that would be helpful.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, we'd be happy to provide that. Just elaborate a little bit more in terms of challenges to fill positions. It goes beyond the two that you mentioned. We've also got the same situation in Basin with the retirement center, having a very difficult time being able to hire again some of those professional positions that are needed, the RNs, et cetera, at that facility also. And then there's a few of those in Cheyenne that are professional positions. Again, are a challenge, a psychologist, et cetera, to fill. And And then we have, as you say, those positions that we've deliberately held as a result of the remission, the new missions and repurposing of the Life Resource Center and the State Hospital, and we'll provide those. But again, folks, you strip out those positions, and then you say Title 25 costs, you know, we just can't, Director, give you the money to pay for all that, and you're going to take my hands, tie them behind my back, and say, why aren't you doing a better job managing your budget?
You got 2 feet.
So,
go ahead.
And Mr. Chairman and Director, I know that we've kind of started on Title 25, but I would also like to know, we had legislatively instructed you to work with the DD providers of the community and kind of rebase that issue. And we've had some discussion in this committee about what it would take to put money into that program, seeing the same difficulties that you've outlined on their business model and that. Do we have a feel yet of what that number would be, how that's matched? I think we were lacking that at our last discussion.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, that is correct. We as the department was asked by the Labor, Health, and Social Services Committee to look at a number, an interim number, for legislative consideration using the information that we gathered from the Workforce Services. And we put that information together that was provided in a report to both this committee and to the Labor Committee. If you use the hourly wage rate of $12.14 an hour, that equates to, for fiscal year 18, $8,561,792. So essentially $8.6 million, of which 50% of that would be federal funds, 50% of that would be state general funds. Recognizing that that number is a large number, we provided a alternative for consideration, and the methodology is essentially the same, but it's a different way of approaching it, and that number drops to approximately $5 million. Of dollars for fiscal year 18, which again would be $2.5 million of it is general fund. Again, that was provided in overall report to the two committees, and a more detailed listing was provided to the co-chairs of the Labor Committee, and I thought this committee had a copy of it. If not, be happy to provide that.
I've seen a copy of it. I don't know if you have one. And I'm curious about that particular document. And I mean, you're working with Workforce Services to get it. You know, most, I think they're paying roughly, the facilities that I'm aware of, they're all paying between $9 and $11 an hour now for staffing. So what increase, I'm just trying to make the sense of those numbers. Are you increasing a dollar and a half an hour to get there for all employees, or what? Or are you going from what to what? Because it didn't really explain the base that where you're moving up from.
Mr. Chairman, I will turn this over to Chris Newman, but before we do that, this is a result of some extensive discussions with the Labor Committee and what we should be basing the costs on, and it was home health aid at $13.55 an hour, and a personal care aide at $10.73 an hour. This is essentially between the two because it's not an exact comparison there. So it's between those two numbers at got to the $12.14 an hour, and then you ratchet that up. That's where you get to the $8.6 million.
And so are you adding employees, or is that just the current base on all existing employees that are currently?
That's just, excuse me.
Go ahead, please.
Mr. Chairman, that is raises for existing employees.
And Mr. Chairman and committee members, Chris Newman, Senior Administrator for Behavioral Health Division. what we do with our rate rebasing and the way the developmental disability waiver providers are funded or those services are calculated, the rates for services, is by plugging in a direct care wage to a formula for each service that includes the overhead, vacation time, amount of time staff will spend with clients, et cetera. So it's a pretty lengthy and involved formula. We had based that formula on a wage earlier, and I think I can get this concretely to you, but off the top of my head, it's about on average $10.30 an hour now plugged into that formula. Navigant, when they did the rate rebasing, it was presented to Joint Labor, Health, and Social Services. I believe the rate was like $11.15, but I'll confirm that. And there were many questions about where they came up with that wage. And I don't want to speak for the committee, but what we heard is that the wage should not reflect true Wyoming wages for people that were providing these services, and that they wanted us to work with workforce services and to determine what an appropriate wage would be that's really based on some Wyoming information. And so that's where Director Forrest uncovered those two categories of wages that Workforce Services gave us. When we looked at the description of those two, we felt the one was more like a nursing home or that type of aid it was too high. That's not an accurate description necessarily of what our direct care staff do across the state. And then the other description was not as involved as what many of our direct care staff do across the state, so we took the average of those two. So what we're doing then is we're plugging that into the formula for how we establish our rates. And that's how we calculated that increase of about $8.5 million for 1 year.
So just so I understand, roughly it's about $2 an hour increase over what is currently being provided. You said it was $10.30 at one point, and then the rebasing went up to $11.50, but you're recommending $12.08 an hour. Did I get that right?
$12.14.
$0.14, yeah. And then how many of the current providers provide health insurance or have more than 50 employees so they're required to provide health insurance versus with all of your providers around the state for the DD waivers? Do you have a breakdown of that?
Mr. Chairman, we do not right now. And I do need, I mean, I think we could pull some of that information together. Certainly we have some larger providers who are required to do that. I do need to clarify as well. The model has always been to collect the wage data from the providers and plug that into the formula. We were asked by this committee to consider a Wyoming wage calculating this outside of the information we got from our providers, but we do not require that the providers pay that wage. We do give them that flexibility to use that as they see fit to run their business. So I just need to clarify that's
so, and just
the model.
From my personal experience, what's happening now is the larger providers are struggling, but the mom and pop who only provide services to three or four or five folks are they can manage on it because there's kind of a transition going on. I mean, do you see that going on?
Mr. Chairman, we do to a certain extent, and that's why with the option that we provided in the document is that we did focus the second option, not doing across the board increase, was to focus on those clients who have higher needs and to use that wage for the services that they're receiving. And we felt like that could be justifiable because those certainly are the more challenging people to serve. They need, most of them need 24-hour, 7-day-a-week services. And those are the providers that are struggling more than some of the ones that are doing more of those intermittent services.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your point was the question that I was going to answer. However, I also believe, Ms. Newman, that you are also looking at ways to, in your process that to also allow providers greater access to the individual budget amounts in streamlining some of those tasks, and have submitted an amendment to Medicaid for our plan. Have we received word back on that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson. So we are working with what we're calling a partnership group, which does include a cross-section of providers to do just what you said, identify changes to our waivers that would provide these providers with more flexibility and be able to do what they need to do and provide quality services without all the restrictive oversight that we have. To clarify, we did have to split out those changes from an amendment we put through to increase the wages and distribute the funding that was appropriated for this fiscal year. We're still waiting to hear on the approval of our amendment for the wage or for the increases that that were appropriated, that dollar amount, and that will be retroactive July 1st of 2016. Once we get that approved and we work with that partnership group, we will be submitting another amendment right after the session, include any changes after the session, and it will include many of those changes.
And then follow up, Mr. Chairman. And so then back to the wages. I think that we also heard testimony that because of the current model that we're in order to get the service personnel that they need, that we're seeing a lot of those facilities having to change their insurance plans, which we understand, and also having to sell a lot of their assets and use any savings, and that burn-through rate of that savings for some of those large providers is pretty significant because they're having to pay a higher wage than they can be reimbursed for. Is that a fair synopsis?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, I believe it is. We do know that they're struggling, absolutely.
Mr. Chairman.
Let's go to the director first.
This is a follow-up to the question you had earlier. Is the 11 largest providers, we have approximately 2,300 people on the providers, DD providers within the state. The largest 11 provide services to 64% of that population.
Thank you. That's useful. Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I just wanted to follow up on Representative Larson's comments. Ms. Newman, thanks for anything you can do on that front. That's something I've got a large provider just down the street from me, and it's very real out there. And I'm sensing that part of that problem was us. We, those of us on this side of the desk, asking the department to slow down and go check on some salaries or whatever, but anything you can do on that front I'm going to really appreciate that. Here's my question. If we were to lose a facility like the one I'm talking about, you know who they are, I believe they have 120-plus clients in that facility. Where would we go with them?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Ladin, I mean, that's absolutely our concern as well. So fortunately, this has not happened often, but we have had at least one large provider close, and it's very challenging. We have to quickly get in there and work with the providers around the state to try to transition them to another provider. But certainly that's a large number. That's very challenging. We don't know if there would be enough beds available or places for them to go. And I just have to emphasize, too, the impact on the clients is not something we want to have happen because then they're being totally displaced and moved all across the state. So,
Mr. Chairman, quick follow-up. Ms. Newman, are you comfortable that with the appropriation that we set forth last session and throughout the interim, the work you did with the Labor and Health Committee, whatever, and with this committee, are we where we need to be, where we can plug the hole in the boat for some of these large providers?
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Landon, what I would say is what I think our providers have voiced to you, that the proposals, the options that Director Forslund walked through are a step to hold them over, depending on how much is given. And then in the meantime, we have taken a step back with our rate rebasing, there's actually a request for a proposal that just closed, and we're getting bids in, to take a little bit longer time and to do that right, so long-term we have better information on exactly what is needed to support these providers.
Thank you.
So, and just to follow up, with the increase that we provided last year for the DD waivers, my understanding is that still has not been distributed. Do we have an update on when that will happen?
Mr. Chairman, we anticipate CMS approving it by the end of this month. and is retroactive to July of last year.
And that total funding for that was
approximately $1 million, of which the at least one provider testified that that is a very small amount that she will be getting compared to her, what her expenses are. And so her message to the Labor Committee is that what was done last session, whenever it gets there, is not going to make...
Yeah, that might make them whole by any means.
No.
And that's so it was where $1 million matched, so it was a $2 billion component to it. And do they have to receive our match before the matching can come into it?
Mr. Chairman, it's all part of the it's not one versus the other. It's just
one payout from you. But I thought it was $2 million or $2.5 million combined.
$1.8 million.
Now, I'd like to go back to the gatekeeper concept because it's one of the frustrations is the time lag that it takes to gear up, to get the program running, and to make it work. And so my question is, are you comfortable with what we've done through statute to implement the gatekeeper statute, or do you think it's necessary or useful that we as a legislature or as the appropriating body do something to bring them quicker to the table, if you will, or you know, there's two or three bills out there. I have a draft bill that would allocate all total dollars for that particular purpose based upon population, so that one or two facilities or one or two counties only can proportionately share in their amount of funds available that we appropriate. I mean, and then they just run out of funds. So there are ways that we can force the issue if you're not getting the type of participation, because I think it's evident that where you have the facilities available, they provide more services and cost more. It's in Laramie County, Fremont County, Sweetwater County, and Natrona County. And they have a disproportionate share of those funds. And that's not a fair representation or, I think, coverage for the rest of the state. Tell us what would best be in your that you would like us to do in order to, or if the gatekeeper process is working or if more needs to be done.
Mr. Chairman, from the department's perspective, this is a multifaceted problem. There's not one simple fix that legislative, you do this, problem solved. I think I've talked to you all. I certainly have talked to other committees at length about this issue. It starts at the very beginning where, as an example, law enforcement picks up a person. I think law enforcement should be required to have CIT training to be able to deal with people at the very beginning. Then it goes through the hospitals, and if you can get those diverted away from the hospital into the community mental health organization to provide assistance there so they don't get in the system, I think needs to be done. I think they need to be in the community mental health organizations need to be incentivized to prioritize this population. We've made that recommendation. It hasn't been accepted up to this point, but it's part of our recommendations. Then you get into the system, and there's a number of legal issues that the county attorneys and the courts have for the legislature. Some of you have heard some of those. There's others out there. Then you get to a point where people are treated, and they're ready to be dismissed, and whether it's at WBI or the state hospital, what do you do with them at that point in time? They just can't go back home if they're homeless. They don't have employment. They don't have access to health care because they're not insured. So they end up being sent where to be, what to be done with them. And so it's a whole continuum of issues or problems out there that need to be addressed in a systematic way. So you're talking about a portion of it, which is the gatekeeping portion of it, and I think that right now some counties are more aggressive in trying to be that gatekeeper than others. I can designate somebody, an organization as the gatekeeper, but I can't offer them money, and I need the input from the county commission per state statute, and I'm waiting for Sweetwater right now, county commission, to get back to me before I formally designate Southwest Counseling as the official gatekeeper. But a number of counties, Jackson and others, are already doing it without the official designation, but they're doing it on their own. So I wish I could tell you, Mr. Chairman, if the legislature does this, it will have a big impact. I can't do that.
Any follow-up questions on that issue? Senator Hastert.
Mr. Chairman, Director Forslund, and I know that talked a little bit about compact coordinator and possibly that being an option, and I know that there was concerns about out-of-state expenses. My concern comes in with an individual sitting, like in our hospital in Sweetwater County, for an extended period of time getting no services and, you know, an offset of getting them out of the states. And I just wondered where you might be with any discussions on compact coordinating with out-of-state providers.
What, Mr. Chairman, Senator Hastert, what he's talking about is you have somebody who law enforcement ends up dropping off at the hospital. They're in the hospital, local hospital, and they need to be sent to a psychiatric facility to receive treatment. And so where is that? If it's not the state hospital, there's no room there, then it's WBI generally within the state, or CRMC here in Cheyenne, a few others. Well, on the fringes of the state, we've heard testimonies that there are problems trying to get into WBI or transport to WBI or CRMC, and can we not put those individuals into a psychiatric facility outside the state of Wyoming? I have responded, we don't have a problem with that as long as they're willing to accept the rate that Department of Health pays, because I will have a hard time justifying paying an out-of-state firm a higher rate than I'll pay in-state firms for. Last I heard is that your hospital CEO we were awaiting his return, but Chris, do you have anything updated on that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hastert, yeah, I had an initial conversation with the CEO before the holidays. He was going to reach out to the Utah hospital that they want to use and schedule a call with us to walk through then going through the rates, the regulations they would have to meet, and reporting requirements. So I'm going to follow up with him again, but did let him know that that is an option that they can pursue.
So, Mr. Director, I think you've probably heard some of this discussion informally, but we're tasked with the pleasant job of cutting about $100 million out of our biennial budget because we are still in a structural deficit. In order to do that, one of the items that we will likely do is do a 1 to 1.5% cut across the board on all agencies, similar to the 8% cut that you received back on June 30th. What our thought process has been, part of our thought process, is to exempt the Department of Health from that cut because of your current financial difficulties. And unfortunately, you're one-third of our budget. And so for us to exempt you, we go from a $15 million across-the-board cut to about a $9.5 million across the court of cut, and so that doesn't get us to our $100 million, because you're about $5.5 million of that 1% of that $15 million, 5.5%, $5.5 million is you, Department of Health. So, in order to address that, one of the concepts that we have been discussing. We'll exempt you, but we're going to do what we did last year, and that is Title 25 is going to land in your lap. And as a result of that, we also did not go through and cut about another 15 or 20% positions out of your agency. I think we listed a few, but certainly not all the ones that we were tempted to cut. And you mentioned that you had a position open in your staffing, but I do know that you have Superflex. And so you don't have to use a position that's in your staffing necessarily. You can just one that's generally funded in order to fill that position. But I'm just presenting to you that as kind of what's coming down the pike from this committee. And so I would welcome your comments on that or any comments from the joint committee with that regards.
Mr. Chairman, first of all, in July, the department took a 9.25% reduction, which was greater than the 8% that you mentioned, which equated to the $90 million in general funds. And at this point in time, and I think the governor has said this, and I'll reiterate to you, is we haven't felt the impacts of all those cuts yet. And some of those impacts will be coming this next fiscal year. Because I told you in both June as well as in December is that we will fall out of compliance with maintenance of effort in a number of our programs. And so while we haven't lost the federal funding in this current fiscal year, we will lose it next fiscal year. So as an example, the community or the developmental preschools haven't felt the impacts of a reduction in the federal funds as of yet. And so that's just an example. There's a number of other programs where we have the match and they have the maintenance of effort requirements. Whether the new administration will be more sympathetic about noncompliance with maintenance of effort, I don't know at this point in time. But we'll certainly be making the appeal. So, again, as the governor says, we haven't felt the full impact of those $250 million or whatever dollars worth of cuts that were made in July of last year as of yet. And there more is coming as a result of those. Secondly, in terms of the department saying, okay, Director, we'll exempt you from whatever the cross-the-board cut. You say 1% or 1.5%. My initial question was that for the biennium, 1% of the biennium budget, 1% of one fiscal year's budget. But
it would biennialize.
So it would be essentially getting that amount out in 1 year instead of 2 years over a two-year period of time, which would feel the impact more. When you get it out in a shorter period
Correct.
Of time.
Well, it would be $4.5 million this biennium, but then for the next biennium, you'd have basically $10.5 million that we wouldn't.
The question that I would reiterate again that I talked about at the very beginning when we got off on the Title 25 is that do I cut $8 million or do I cut $15 million? Or something in between, because I don't know at this point in time. And I can't wait. I won't have the luxury of time to make that decision. And so I'll have to make that call probably as soon as you guys put the budget to bed and send out the notices that we're cutting further. Unless we want to start shutting down facilities. And so it's some very tough decisions. And what concerns me is they're talking about DD providers earlier who we didn't have any cuts to, and you're concerned about their sustainability going forward and whether trying to get more money to them. And I'm looking at some of the providers that took 12 to 14% cuts. And then I turn around and cut them on top of that. How many of them am I going to put out of business. And ultimately, somebody has to make the call. And obviously, making that call is not going to be easy. And you are, again, talking about significant or real ramifications in communities and within this state. So I understand your dilemma. I'm just kind of sharing you with you my dilemma, and when with further cuts potentially coming here, and having a Title 25 system that I can't truly manage and control to say, okay, here's the cost, and it won't go beyond that. It's just beyond my control, and it's frustrating for you. It's frustrating for me.
Well, and obviously in the state facility or the healthcare subcommittee, well, there's more work that has to be done on that. There's just no question about it. So, further questions for the director? Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Forson, I've got just a couple. One goes back to the early part of the Title 25. You said they got up to a year under statute to bill you. If we shorten that up, does that help you a little bit to be able to forecast if they had to get that billing to you in a shorter time frame?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Driscoll, yeah. It certainly will give us more information or sooner information. But, again, this is just not a Title 25 issue. It's a state law for I think, all vendors.
Mr. Chairman, would you like to see that shrunk up and to what period, if you would? What time frame would you like to see if you were making a pick that was yours that you think is livable for them?
From a department specter, sooner the better. From a payer's perspective, longer the better. There has to be some compromise in there. If you cut that down to 6 months, as an example, cut it in half, you know, I'm not sure what providers would say about that. But getting it shorter would be helpful for us.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, second one, clear off, and I think you know the numbers. I've heard one time. If we were to divest of Basin Pioneer Home, sell it to somebody, step away from it, what's the net savings to the state of Wyoming, bottom line, after we've transferred out the ones we need to?
Hey, I'm asking Basin first. Mr. Chairman, Senator Driscoll, net is approximately $4.7 million savings for the biennium.
For Basin?
For Thermop.
Okay, what about Basin?
Basin would be, Mr. Chairman, approximately $284,000. Now,
Mr. Chairman, can we get that second number again?
$284,000. Yes. The issue there and is that through the rate rebasing that happened 2 years ago, legislature appropriated money for increased rates for nursing homes. The state of Wyoming's Basin Retirement Center had, in effect, one of the worst reimbursement rates in the state. So when that new rate went into effect, we came close to breaking even on our operations, minus depreciation. So if you got major capital improvements, we're not funding that right now. Obviously, we could build that in, but this is not an enterprise fund, so it's part of the general fund. And so we are close to breaking that even. The Pioneer Home in Thermopolis is not anywhere close to coming even. We have been increasing rates every year, but we were so afraid of rate shock, huge increases overnight. We've been upping it each year to try to get into a point where they're covering costs, but it'll probably take about 10 years to get there unless we want to speed that up and potentially lose clientele.
One last question, Mr. Chairman. we were talking about Laramie County and how they've skyrocketed up. Do they by any chance have a contract with the hospital like Natrona does?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Driscoll, no.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions? Well, on that cheery note, we'll thank you, Director. We appreciate it. And it's tough times on your side and on our side. And yep. I think our side might be almost easier than yours. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your attention.
DOT. Director Panos, welcome. Welcome back. Now that you have heard the wrath of the first time we met you on potential cuts to the DOT and your financing, we welcome your comments and follow-up by the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, thank you. Thank you for having us back. I appreciate the time. We were able to get our team together this weekend and finish it up yesterday, and so we're pleased to provide you a little bit of feedback, some analysis of the scenarios that you had talked about earlier. I have again with me our Chief Financial Officer, Dennis Byrne, and a number of our staff behind me. For the sake of time, I won't go through and introduce all of them. But they all worked very, very hard on getting this analysis together, and we're really confident we're providing you with the best information that we can provide you. So we were asked in our presentation on Friday, last Friday, to come back and talk a little bit about the potential impact if the agency were to not have general fund in the 17-18 remainder, and then we also extended into the 19-20, so we got a clear picture of what it looked like in a biennium. We've prepared an analysis. It's a little bit long. I think it's 6 pages or so, but it's in front of you. I think you received that earlier today. If you hadn't, looks like that, just 8.5 by 11 piece of paper. We tried to keep it as simple as we could. And actually, at first, I'll refer unless you'd like me to go through each page, I actually have an executive summary on the back, and I prepare it for not only you to read through, and then you can look back at additional details, but it also helps me in making presentations like this. So, again, I want to thank you for the opportunity to prepare it. So I'll just get right into it. When we look at overall in our analysis, and as you have heard from the agency before, the state has done a couple of things to control costs and manage revenue associated with this transportation system. Two fundamental steps to stabilize the revenue condition. First, in years past, it's shifted from a statewide transportation policy of improvement and replaced it with a statewide transportation policy of preservation. So this went from expansion to maintaining the system as well as we can. The second policy was to really transform the exclusive use of state general funds and rely on a combination of user fees, which includes fuel tax, vehicle registration, driver's license, and state general funds. So it's kind of a combination of those as well. Those two things have helped a great deal, particularly the fuel tax and others, have helped us to maintain the system, preserve the system, preserve the investment, the $16 billion investment, and to try and focus in at around 1% of that asset's value in terms of maintaining that asset, that large asset, in any given year. Because of continued pressure, revenue pressure, and you have heard, I think, the agency come back to you and talk to you about this before, but there is some shortfalls, annual shortfalls that we see that we've been absorbing of around $68.7 million towards the optimal expenditure towards the preservation of that $16 billion asset. So that's sort of an ongoing thing that we are managing to. But it is something we don't want to forget. We don't want to forget that we're about 68.7 behind annually on maintaining the current asset, the $16 billion asset that you all have invested in over the last few years. So when we looked at this hypothetical, we thought about that, but we looked clearly at general fund revenues right now, a current condition in 17-18. And as the governor's recommendations indicated, general funds are generally found in three different areas: surface transportation, aeronautics, airports, and Wyolink. And so we focused on those three areas, continued to focus on those three areas, and we were able to come up with some implications. Now, in 17-18, we actually don't have a full load at this point of general funds. Why? Because we've been expending, and we've been expending in a fairly aggressive way because we have a lot of work to do. So the available general funds for 17 and 18 is about $6,206,358. We had pennies there, but I took those off. So, but it's pretty close to that. So that's what's available between now and the end of the biennium. Now, if we were to remove that from our current revenue streams and our expenditures, we would see the following. 46 airport projects would be stopped or delayed. We would have the loss of commercial air service in the cities of Rock Spring and the cities of Sheridan. We would have a partial loss of commercial air service in the city of Riverton, Gillette, Cody, and Jackson. The communities that would be impacted by that and by the 46 airport projects that would be stopped or delayed are the following. Afton, Big Piney, Casper, Cheyenne, Cody, Douglas, Dixon, Dubois, Evanston.
You don't have to read the whole list. Okay. We can read it ourselves.
Okay. So there's a list. It's about, I wanted to try and count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 24 communities. These are the project locations for the 46 projects and some of the others. The reason why there's loss of service in Rock Springs and Sheridan is because we have an air enhancement service program that is fully funding those services currently. The reason why there's only partial loss of air enhancement service in Riverton and Gillette is in the case of, let's say, Gillette, we are funding the Gillette route to Salt Lake City. We are not funding the Gillette route to Denver. So that one would remain, but the Salt Lake City would go away. Riverton actually has air service that is connected to Sheridan. When it loses air service, Riverton would have lost all of its air service, but it currently has...
Mr. Director, you have, in your report, you have stopped or delayed. Those are entirely two different things. Can you break this out to what's delayed and how much and what is particularly stopped? Or do you have that information?
We can get that to you.
Okay, would you please provide that?
Sure. The ones that are stopped and the ones that are delayed, we'd be happy to do that.
Thank you.
And so back to commercial air service. So Riverton is connected to Sheridan. If we lose Sheridan, then we will lose the recently established commercial side of Riverton. But Great Lakes Airlines is actually still running some planes in there, so that's why they don't lose all of their service. In the case of Gillette, I've described the two routes. One of them would be lost, one of them would stay. In the case of Cody and in the case of Jackson.
So, Mr. Director, just sure. I'm sorry to keep interrupting, but
it's okay.
We're on a short window.
Sure.
What you're saying is that but for the gas tax that you received, all of this would have already happened already. Is that right? Because you get more than $46 million over a biennium from your gas tax, or roughly that amount.
Are you saying fuel tax?
Fuel tax, the 10 cent increase.
The 10 cent increase, the fuel tax, and I'll have Dennis maybe weigh in a little bit. We focus that, and I believe, and then unless Dennis tells me something different, we focus that on the highways. That is not allowed to be used at airports for airport improvement projects or air enhancement service. So it's not available to us to keep airports open or to do work there.
So all of these impacts are strictly highways, and these are non-highway funds.
These are general funds,
okay.
Just the general funds. So the general funds are focused on aeronautics and airports, WildLink, and some surface transportation. We see no effect initially in 17-18 on surface transportation, and the reason we don't is because most of that money's already been spent out. We will see some effect on the general fund revenue to the airports, as I'm describing now. And we will see no effect or very little effect on WildLink, again, because some of that money's already been spent. So this is what's remaining of general fund, and it is focused in the area of airports. So we tried to be as specific as we could. This is detailed. Again, I'm using the executive summary, and I apologize for that. This is detailed in the analysis that's attached.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Two questions. One on the airport improvement program, airport construction. Is that you get a bunch of federal money for that, don't you? Is that dependent on match, or do you just get that money?
We have both. I'm sorry. We have both types of projects. We have matched projects, which vary in terms of their percentage match, but we do have to have a state participation, and then we have a state only funded projects as well.
What's the match ratio?
Mr. Chairman, it depends on the type of project, but generally 95.5, 94.6, but it's close to that.
And so then to follow up on that, what's the total amount of dollars you receive federally to put one of those projects biannually for airport maintenance?
Mr. Chairman, if you give me just a sec, I think I can.
We can look it up in our book.
Okay, while he's looking that up, Mr. Chairman, my other question has to do with the impacts to Air Surface Enhancements Administration. If we cut it this year and we have 6 months left in this year, well, actually a year and a half, I don't understand the difference between 22, it's a loss of almost $23,000 for one biennium and $237,000 the next biennium.
That's because much of the first biennium has already been spent, and this was what's left, what's available. Most of the first biennium, this biennium, has already been spent, and we have just that much available that is still around in general fund that would be cut in this scenario.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we have 6 months left in this biennium. That's one quarter of the biennium. I don't understand why.
We don't expend the same amount of money in any given month for that fund.
I'm sorry?
We spend an inconsistent amount of money in any given month for that administration fund because some months they're busy in traveling, and that's part of what's being caught. Sometimes they don't travel. So you would have an inconsistent expenditure level during that time. The point here of this number is that for at least for the administration number, the Air Service Administration number, is that we have already been spending general fund in that area, and this is what's remaining there according to our records. And when we start a whole new biennium, we'll reload it theoretically in the general fund side with 237.
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Please.
I have an answer for the previous question, Senator Burns, and that is we have approximately $45 million in federal funds for AIP on a biennium basis.
And so, Director, I'm focusing more on the 19 and 20 bienniums because I think we were under the impression that at most that are available through any cuts that we impose is about $5.5 million through this biennium. And so the first page of figures are emphatic in that way. But then going to page 3 on your surface transportation, roads, and bridges, how many of that $35 million can you use the 10% increase in fuel tax for statutorily?
We have a mix of funds for surface transportation. This is only the general fund contribution to that mix of funds.
You're not answering my question. My question is, if you used federal dollars for that and you didn't use, I mean, you create the mix, not us, how much of those would be eligible to use the federal dollars in so that, and if you didn't have to use general fund in terms of your, and how you allocate those fees? And they're surface highways. Are you consider that something different than roads and bridges?
Surface transportation, we just use the term roads and bridges. It makes it easier for some people to understand what we're talking about. It's primarily roads and bridges.
So I think that you understand my question, or Dennis, I think you do. I'm just curious.
Mr. Chairman, so let's talk about the $35 million. That's general fund dollars. So we would be able to use 10-cent fuel tax or federal dollars for, I would say, almost most of those projects, for a very healthy percentage of those projects. What it does, Mr. Chairman, if I may, is it delays $35 million worth of projects.
No, I totally understand. If we're going to cut $40 million, you're going to lose $40
million.
Right. Yeah. Representative Lars.
Could I ask again what the recent 10-cent fuel tax addition equated to? I know you gave it to us a little bit ago, but remind me.
I'm not sure I understand the question. I apologize.
We recently passed a fuel tax a year or two ago, 3 years ago, and I just want to know what that additional 10% equates to on an annual basis or what it averages out to.
Go ahead, Dan.
Mr. Chairman, it's roughly $43 million a year to YDOT.
Yeah, a year.
A year.
So 86 million a biennium.
Yes.
and then the increases that you received in under the new transportation bill is roughly $5 million annually. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, if I may just explain that just a little bit.
Sure.
So
please do.
That's what they are suggesting they might appropriate to us, but that is not what we have actually been receiving in their obligation. So that's an estimate of what the appropriation would be, but the obligation authority is always less than the appropriated amount. So it would be hard for me to say exactly how much we would see of that anticipated $5 million increase.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Discrell.
Mr. Chairman, so additional 5% fuel tax would approximately equate to filling the general fund loss. What other areas might we go to if you were to try to find something other than general funds? Where else could we go?
Well, there's a couple of places, if I may, Mr. Chairman. One is, of course, user fees. So in that second column, if you remember the chart that we talked about Friday, there was federal funds, dedicated state, and then other state. So when we talk about dedicated state funds, there's really three things. As the chairman pointed out, the fuel tax that's there. There is registration fees, and there is driver's license fees. And those are primarily the three dedicated funding streams to roads, to surface transportation. And as I described earlier, the introduction of the fuel tax was to offset some of the general fund pressure from before, and it's done a great job, by the way. It's really, really helped. So if by an increase, and I had mentioned this before, registration fees in the state of Wyoming have not changed. The state portion of registration fees in the state of Wyoming have not changed since 1975. If we were to alter the state portion of the registration fees by just, if we look at the total registration fee, which includes the county, if you do it by 4%, or if you increase the state portion from $15 to $30 or so, you would generate $40 million in a biennium. If you were to increase a driver's license fee from what it is now at $20, which was established in 1993, and you were to go to, let's say, $40, you would generate another $9 million in the biennium. The interesting part of looking at fuel tax, looking at dedicated state funds, so fuel tax or registration or driver's license, is that you free up some pressure in the third column, which is not just general fund, but it's federal mineral royalty and severance is sitting over there as well. And if you open up some capacity there, we actually could apply it theoretically, if you were to do that, to the airports. And that might actually resolve some of the issues there, because they're already using some federal mineral royalty and severance, but we could apply more. And that might free that capacity up to do that. So within the context of what you have now, you do have some play to move some things around a little bit. Those are some of the sources that are come off the top of my mind when you do it. There's probably one more thing that may be considered, and that's something that I think you've done previously with some other agencies, in that that the legislature itself move the responsibility of setting some of those. Again, they could give guidance and say you can't, obviously raise fees more, like in registration or driver's license, more than your costs or anything like that. We'd have to follow all that, but that go into the agency or go to the commission. By doing that, that actually creates a similar situation that I think you have in Game and Fish and some other places, where they are watched over and there's accountability there, but they're setting those rates very focused on their costs as they move forward. As I reflected back in the case of the example of registration hasn't changed since 75, and in driver's license not since 93. I hope that answers your question, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, one follow-up.
Go ahead.
You alluded to your federal funds potentially going to the airport. If our other funds was to rise, would that potentially open up some more federal funds you'd have access to? You said it'd give us flexibility, but would it possibly, with a higher other account, would that increase some federal match somewhere possibly?
Go ahead. I'm going to let Dennis answer that one. I'm going to think about it a little bit too.
Mr. Chairman, in some circumstances, the answer to that is yes. So as other states are unable to use their federal funding, it kind of goes back into a pot. And if we have the ability to match those funds, and they're generally discretionary funds, discretionary federal dollars, then we have the opportunity to then potentially use those dollars.
Mr. Chairman, if I may just finish up very quickly here, some of the impacts in 19 and 20, is that your preference, or?
So, I mean, we can see what you okay. assert are the impacts. You know, it's one of those things that obviously you're coming with a bucket of water and throwing it at us, and to me, you're doing it in a way that you're sensationalizing the issues and not telling us any facts. We don't know what the impact is going to be on Alcoa, on what particular project is involved, or how you came up with that list, or how much money it is, what the delay is, if it's 6 months, or if it's a year, or if it's a year and a half, or 2 years. And so, it's a little bit frustrating to me when I see this list, and as you can probably see it in my face, but I want to get as educated as we can as a committee on what those real impacts are. And I also want, as you alluded to just a little bit earlier, the creativity and the genius of YDOT to tell us how do we fix these problems? How do we do the best we can when we don't have the money to do what you would like us to do? I mean, quite honestly, we have some of the best highways in the nation. I mean, I've traveled all over the place, and we have some of the best highways in the nation. We just do. And so I'm a little bit frustrated by the concept that if we don't pay $70 million a year, then we're going downhill. If that's totally accurate, then every other state in the nation is getting worse faster than we are, just in my own practical experience. But what we really do is we need your help on this as opposed to us being at loggerheads on this thing. And so with that, yeah, please walk us through as much as you can to help us and where we're going.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I apologize if I've given you the impression of you use the words loggerheads or you use the word sensationalizing. This is an upload of facts, fact-based information. We have the background on every single one of these projects, what stopped, what's delayed. We just didn't in the time between Friday morning and now, we can produce that for the committee. We can produce that. All of this is based on all of the facts that we have, and we probably have the best information on where all the projects are in the state of Wyoming. So there is no better information than the information that you have here.
And I can just give an example. The idea that we're going to shut down air service to two airports just because you say we're going to do it, because these are the only funds available for it, I don't think that's a fair representation. We'll keep those airports open. We have to find out ways to do it, but we have to find ways that, if we can, to reduce your budget. So,
Mr. Chairman, and I don't have access to all of those options. You do, and maybe there's more here. But from our analysis, we were looking at simply if we don't have those anymore and we don't have a replacement for them, this would be the impacts to us given the information that we have now. If we had more information from the committee or if we had more information from other sources, we could plug that in here. And there are always options to do this.
Sure.
And I, like you, Chairman, Mr. Chairman, look at this as a partnership. We're here for you. We're here as your agency to get these through. And we do have some strategies that we've talked about, some for the Senator earlier, Senator Driscoll earlier, about ideas that you could consider and that we could give you some detailed analysis on how to deploy. So we're here for you, to make sure that you can get through all of these things. And our objective, like your objective, is to make sure that transportation is not only present but robust. We, last year we were number one in spending of any state in the United States on transportation. This year we're number eight. That's a fact. It's not a perception. It just is what the federal government has said. So we are, I don't know if that means that we've done anything different, or other states are doing something different. I can't tell you why, but we're moving in that direction.
That's population based or a road based? Where does that come
The from? Analysis is based on all of those factors and looking at that over a long period of time. And every year they rank every state and its expenditure of money towards, highways. We were number one last year. We're number eight this year in the United States. And so, and they don't generally fluctuate a lot like that, but ours did fluctuate down a little bit, and we're looking at that number and trying to find ways of going up, because I believe you're right. We do a great job with the monies that we have. This 68.7 is very specific and has been looked at by our pavement preservation program, which this committee and the legislature has received over the years, so that it is not, this isn't new information. This is information that we have been providing for a while. I didn't want to emphasize that because I'm with you. I am not wanting to look at those things which we're not doing. I want to look at those things which we can do. And so that's why I wanted to make sure that I can give you even more options, but that I give you options for how to, if this were to occur, how to recover, right? And then how to go beyond it and build a foundation by which we can grow the transportation system. So please don't mistake it. We're your partner here.
You bet. Questions? I think we're probably going to need to run back in session. And we're losing our ears. So,
Mr. Chairman, we just had one more little small amount of information to give you on the Air Enhancement Service and why you see such an immediate effect in Sheridan and why you see such an immediate effect in Rock Springs.
Go ahead, please.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, thank you. So previous to being the CFO, I was the Aeronautics Administrator, so I can speak on this very directly. So currently in Sheridan and Riverton and the other communities that are listed here, we and the communities have entered into a minimum revenue guarantee with the airlines to provide service. What those minimum revenue guarantees do are essentially reduce risk for the airline. So the difference is between actual cost of operation and actual revenue. We pay the difference. In order for the airline to get on its feet, to be able to serve a community without needing any kind of additional assistance. So what we're suggesting in Rock Springs and Sheridan is that those airlines are not profitable today. And so if there is no one to step in and pay the difference between actual cost and actual revenue, those airlines, I mean, it's a business model, right? They're not profitable. They just leave.
They'll depart.
They will depart. So unless the communities can come up with the difference between what the state
and
happens
the,
to be paying.
Are they consistent? Are their deplanements going down significantly like Cheyenne has?
Mr. Chairman, I think there's some folks behind me that can speak to this better, but in general we're seeing trends upward in terms of deplanements.
From those two communities?
Rock Springs and Sheridan. I think Rock Springs is pretty stable, but Sheridan is certainly increasing.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else?
I have one question. Thank you. So I understand now and we passed that the 10-cent fuel tax only can be used on roads. So talk to me about your other funds and what they can be used on. So you have severance dollars. So some of the other funds, what can they be used on?
So I'll let Dennis talk through some of the categories of funds, but let me start by talking about the overview. So there's the federal, there's the state dedicated, which includes fuel tax, registrations, and driver's license. And then there's the other state funds that include federal mineral royalty and severance, general fund, and our fees, the fees that we charge other agencies to perform work for them. Like I had mentioned before, counties and cities that we're doing work for, we charge a fee for. So there's some fee structure there. So I'll let Dennis kind of talk through those, that last side, and talk about where we can spend those monies.
Really quick, Mr. Chairman. So I'll just focus on state funds, so not the federal dollars so much, but the other state funds.
So, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Chairman, we have, generally speaking, in a normal biennium, we have mineral royalties and severance taxes that we can use flexibly within our organization to pay for operational needs. There aren't any real restrictions on those dollars. Any user fee, state user fee that we collect is constitutionally limited for highways or for the enforcement of traffic laws on highways, roads, bridges, that sort of thing.
So, Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I know we've been given this, but just tell me how much of that severance and FMRs, those flexible monies that you have, how much How much is that a biennium?
Mr. Chairman, on a normal biennium, and I'm using that term for a reason I'll explain in just a second, in a normal biennium, I think our on a biennium basis, let me talk about an annual basis. On an annual basis, it's about $74 million between mineral revenues and severance taxes. Now, if I, Mr. Chairman, if I could get back to the normal piece of that, normal biennium piece of that. As all of you folks are aware, and I just want to clarify, for 17 and 18, we did the AML swap. We are not getting any mineral royalties or severance taxes. So we don't have any in 17 and 18 in this biennium. It's all AML funds, and the AML funds have restrictions that we can't use for airports. It has to go on the roads.
And so going by your sheet here, how does the AML fund component impact this, your calculations here?
Mr. Chairman, if it won't, and the reason is that we don't have any in 17 and 18, so these are the only general funds that we're talking about, the $6.2 million. And then we are anticipating getting our federal mineral royalties and severance taxes back in 19 and 20, which is kind of a standard budget approach for us. So we're getting in back there, but this 49 represents just the general fund dollars.
Okay, and it's obviously we just saw this, so it's going to take a little bite digesting. So we may have to have informally some conversations about this before we actually get to the markup on it. And
we're happy to do that.
Yeah, Bill, I'll call you when we need you.
Okay.
Okay.
That's great. We'll be around. And so we want to get you all the information that you need objectively so that you can make the best decision possible. And then if we don't get you enough, we'll get you more.
So and what I'd like to know, I mean, obviously you did a lot of homework over the weekend.
We did.
So you ought to have an assessment of what you're contemplating in terms of delay versus not perform. And when you talk about delay, what type of delays you're talking about, and so we can have a realistic concept of what that is. And what I really need and what we need is an honest assessment of how you can use your dollars to maximize what you're doing as opposed to maximizing what delays and programs you're going to – you have to stop. If you understand what I'm asking?
Yeah, no, I do. I do. And, again, I didn't want to give you an impression that – there are absolutes here. There's gray with all of it, especially our scheduling. One of the advantages we have is that we have really good CAPCON planning for our airports and CAPCON planning for our roads. We have what's called, as you've seen before, a five-year STIP, State Transportation Improvement Program, which we've been working on for decades, and it's really sophisticated. So we have a very clear understanding about when we start and stop projects and which ones we put in delay mode or in what order, and we have a lot of fluidity there. We have a lot of resources there to be able to get you that kind of information. So there is grays here, and so we can play with it a little bit, but these are based on our first, you know, the run this weekend. We looked at all of it. We uploaded it and then drew conclusions. Some will stop. Some will delay. And it's a mix. It's a mix of those just because of where we're at. Our equipment's mobilized in a certain area, you know, that kind of thing. We try and think about all of that to keep the cost of the state down as low as possible.
And I'm not sure what your definition of stop is
right, either.
So we right. just need clarification on it, okay?
Got it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You bet. Further questions? Go ahead, Simon.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I know you said this, and so just briefly on the air transportation thing, the only way to really find kind of dollars for that is basically to repurpose your FMRs or severance or something else and have some other funding come in through fees or whatever if you wanted to do some kind of swap there. There's nothing we can do right now that would get money to that those programs.
Mr. Chairman, and Representative Summers, I would say that it's not the only thing. It's the only thing I can think of now and over the last couple of days because we pondered this a little bit. Like, how would we – still activate? You know, how would we still move it all forward? Very similar to what you were talking about earlier, Mr. Chairman. How do we get it all going? And so I appreciate the opportunity to talk about that a little bit. But, you know, we could put our mind on it and see if there's others. But that's the most – because of the freeing from user fee increases to that side of the of our revenue stream, that looked like a really close place to go, a very consistent place to go to inject more money into the airport side and keep it going, especially the AES side, the Air Enhancement Service side, to keep that going. And we want to advance that. It's really important that you have uninterrupted service there and the AES program. It's also really important to all of these communities. Again, I apologize, Mr. Chairman, for listing them, but the communities that are here, it's important for them because those are airport potholes or those are fences or security issues that the FAA may require them to have, and we need to get those in place too. So this would help with those too. It would forward all of that as well. A lot of this is, as by the way, and I'll let you read the impact analysis. A good example of this is those weather stations in 19 and 20. It says here, because we would lose those five weather stations in our mountain passes because of the lack of FAA inspections, they're it's not a normal kind of facility. They're highly regulated by the federal government and highly certified and decertified by the federal government. And so when we have potholes on runways or we have fences, they don't have a lot of play in them. We either have to do it, you know, you either do it or you don't. And the FAA is right on our shoulder saying, you didn't do it, you can't move forward. Or, you know, you did do it, good, you're certified, you can go to the next year. So those kinds of projects are highly sensitive that way. It isn't like all the projects require certification, but those airports are highly sensitive to this kind of movement, which is why, again, it's very familiar for us to be able to use that FMR severance source, if it were to free up a little bit, to move more into the airports to keep that going. Because our goal is your goal, to keep all those systems, transportation systems, moving forward.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Driscoll.
Just a couple, if I'm out of bounds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Back to basing off Representative Summers a little bit. Can we get a little bit of a history on the different user fees and what they generate and what they might if we were to change them? I'm not a keen person on fees, but the impact in our communities of all of the construction projects you guys got are major. And we've talked through the years of what happens when we quit building schools and highways are the same. And so I'd like to see potentials what you could do to fill that revenue gap, be it a piece of gas tax, some flexibility in your fees or whatever, and see what it looks like in the past and going ahead, what we could do to possibly help you backfill a little bit.
I've got a list of questions, but we'd be here all night to get them through.
Well, Mr. Chairman, can we can get together, and talk some more, and I can get you all the information and answer all the questions that you need.
Yep.
Happy to do that.
I guess it'll happen. So. All right. Well, we're back. What's it on adjournment?
Mr. Chairman, you do have the Water Development Commission on adjournment.
Okay. We'll accommodate you either way. We got things to do, so we'll work around your schedule.
I will return as soon as we can.
All right.
Thank you.
We trump.
Tell us to wait.